You know perfectly well that you're not going to be allowed to store cheese in my walk-in closet, Julia declared sternly, seeing as their current apartment had a storeroom in the basement that Julia referred to as the Museum of Abandoned Hobbies. Every third month, Ro would become obsessed with something. 1950s dresses, or bouillabaisse, or antique coffee services, or CrossFit, or bonsai trees, or a podcast about the Second World War. Then she would spend 3 months studying the subject in question with unstinting devotion on internet forums populated by people who clearly shouldn't be allowed Wi-Fi in whatever padded cell they were locked up in, and then she would suddenly get fed up and immediately find a new obsession. The only hobby that had remained constant since they got together was that Ro collected shoes, and nothing could sum up a person more clearly than the fact that she owned 200 pairs of shoes, yet always managed to have the wrong ones on when it was raining or snowing.
No, I don't know that perfectly well, because I haven't measured it yet, so I don't know if there'd be room for the cheese in there. And my plants also need, Ro began, because she had just decided to start growing plants under heat lamps in the hobby room, which was a walk-in closet. Or a...
In the meantime, Aunt Elena was running her hand over a cushion cover and thinking about sharks. She'd been thinking about them a lot recently, because in their marriage, she and Roger had come to resemble sharks. That was a source of silent sorrow for Aunt Elena. She kept rubbing the cushion cover and distracted herself by thinking out loud, "Is this from IKEA?" "Yes, it's definitely from IKEA. I recognize it. They do a floral version as well. The floral version's nicer. Honestly, the things people do these days."
You could have woken Aunt Elena in the middle of the night and asked her to recite the IKEA catalog. Not that there'd be any reason to, of course, but you could if you wanted to. That's the point. Aunt Elena and Roger have been to every IKEA store in the whole country. Roger has many faults and failings. Aunt Elena knows people think that. But Aunt Elena is always reminded that he loves her in IKEA. When you've been together for a very long time, it's the little things that matter. In a long marriage, you don't need words to have a row, but you don't need words to say, "I love you," either. Once, when they were at IKEA, very recently, Roger had suggested when they were having lunch in the cafeteria that they each have a piece of cake, because he understood that it was an important day for Aunt Elena, and because it was important to her, it was important to him as well. Because that's how he loves her. She went on rubbing the cushion cover that was nicer in the floral pattern and glanced over at the two women in a way Aunt Elena thought was discreet, the pregnant one and her wife. Roger was looking at them as well. He was holding the realtor's prospectus with the layout of the apartment in his hand and grunted, "For God's sake, darling, look at this. Why do they have to call the small room child's room? It could just as well be a perfectly ordinary damn bedroom." Roger didn't like it when there were pregnant women at apartment viewings, because couples expecting a baby always bid too much. He didn't like children's rooms either. That's why Aunt Elena always asks Roger as many questions as she can think of when they walk through the children's section in IKEA, to help distract him from the incomprehensible grief. Because that's how she loves him. Ro caught sight of Roger and grinned, as if they weren't really at war with each other. "Hi, I'm Ro, and that's my wife Julia over there. Can I borrow your tape measure? I forgot mine."
"Absolutely not," Roger snapped, clutching his tape measure, pocket calculator, and notepad so hard that his eyebrows started to twitch.
"Calm down, I only want to," Ro began.
"We all have to take responsibility for our own actions," Aunt Elena interrupted sharply.
Ro looked surprised. Surprise made her nervous. Nervousness made her hungry. There wasn't much she could eat in the immediate vicinity, so she reached for one of the limes in the bowl on the coffee table. Aunt Elena saw this and exclaimed,
"Dear me, what on earth are you doing? You can't eat those. They're viewing limes."
Ro let go of the lime and stuffed her hands in the pockets of her dress. She went back to her wife, muttering, "No, this apartment isn't us, hon. It's nice and all that, but I'm getting bad vibes here. Like we could never be our best selves here, yeah? Remember me saying I'd read about we energies that month when I was thinking of becoming an interior designer? When I learned that we had to sleep facing east and then forgot if it was your head or your feet that, well, Never mind. I just don't want this apartment. Can't we just go? Zara was standing out on the balcony. She gathered the wreckage of her feelings into an expression of derision and went back into the apartment. Just as she walked in, the pregnant woman let out a yelp. At first, it sounded like a roar of guttural rage from an animal that's just been kicked, but eventually the words became clearer.
No! That's enough, Ro! I can take the birds, and I can take your awful taste in music, and I can take a whole load of other crap, but I'm not leaving here until we've bought this apartment! Even if I have to give birth to our child right here on this carpet!
The apartment fell completely silent. Everyone was staring at Julia. The only person who wasn't was Zara, because she was standing just inside the balcony door and staring at the bank robber. 1 second passed, then two, in which Zara was the only person in the room who had realized what was about to happen. Then Anna Lena also caught sight of the figure in the ski mask and cried out, "Oh, dear Lord, we're being robbed!" Everyone's mouths opened at the same time, but no words came out. Fear can numb people at the sight of a pistol, switch off everything except the brain's most important signals, silence all background noise. Another second passed, then one more, in which all they heard was their own heartbeats. First the heart stops, then it races. First comes the shock of not understanding what's happening, then comes the shock of realizing precisely what's happening. The survival instinct and fear of dying start to fight, making space for some surprisingly irrational thoughts in between. It's not unusual to see a pistol and think, "Did I switch the coffee machine off this morning?" instead of, "What's going to happen to my children?" But even the bank robber was silent, just as scared as all the others. After a while, the shock gradually turned to confusion. Anna Lena sputtered, "You are here to rob us, aren't you?" The bank robber seemed to be about to protest, but didn't have time before Anna Lena started to tug at Roger like he were a green curtain, crying, "Get your money out, Roger!" Roger squinted skeptically at the bank robber and was evidently engaged in a complicated internal struggle, because on the one hand, Roger was very cheap, but on the other, he wasn't particularly enamored with the thought of dying in an apartment with this much potential for renovation. So he pulled his wallet from his back pocket, where men like him always keep their wallets, except when they're at the beach, when they keep it in their shoe, but found nothing of use in it. So he turned to the person closest to him, who happened to be Zara, standing over by the balcony door, and asked, "Have you got any cash on you?" Zara looked shocked. It was hard to work out if that was because of the pistol or the question.
"Cash? Seriously, do I look like a drug dealer?"
The bank robber's eyes, visible through the repeatedly adjusted holes in the sweaty mask, were darting around the room. Eventually, the bank robber shouted,
No, this isn't a robbery. I just..."
Then corrected that statement in a breathless voice.
"Well, maybe it is a robbery, but you're not the victims. It's maybe more like a hostage situation now, and I'm very sorry about that. I'm having quite a complicated day here."
That's how it all began. Chapter 29.
Witness interview, date December 30th, name of witness, Anna Lena. "Hello, my name's Jack."
"I don't want to talk to any more policemen."
"I can certainly understand that. I've just got a few brief questions."
"If Roger was here, he'd have told you that you're all idiots, the whole lot of you, for managing to lose a bank robber who was trapped inside an apartment."
"That's why I need to ask my questions, so that we can find the perpetrator."
"I want to go home."
"Believe me, I do understand that. We're just trying to work out what happened inside the apartment. Can you tell me what happened when the perpetrator first came in with the pistol?"
"That woman, Zara, she had her shoes on. And the other one, Ro, was going to eat one of the limes. You don't do things like that at apartment viewings. There are unwritten rules."
"Sorry?"
"She was going to eat one of the limes. The viewing limes. You can't eat the viewing limes because the realtors put them there as decoration. They're not for eating. I was about to go and find the agent and tell her to get Ro thrown out because you just can't behave like that. But at that very moment, that lunatic burst through the door waving a pistol."
I see. And then what happened?
You should talk to Roger. He's got a very good memory.
Roger's your husband? And you'd gone to look at the apartment together?
Yes, Roger said it would be a good investment. Is this table from IKEA? Yes, it is, isn't it? I recognize it. They do it in ivory as well. That would have gone better with the walls.
I have to confess that I am not responsible for the way our interview rooms are furnished.
Just because it's an interview room doesn't mean it can't look nice, does it? Seeing as you were already in IKEA, that ivory table is right next to this one in the self-service area, but you still pick this one. Well, everyone makes their own choices.
I'll see if I can raise it with my boss.
Well, that's up to you.
When Roger said the apartment was a good investment, did that mean that you wouldn't be settling there? You'd just buy it and sell it on later?
Why are you asking that?
I'm just trying to understand who was in the apartment and why, so that we can rule out the possibility that any of the hostages was in any way connected to the perpetrator.
Connected?
We think someone may have helped him.
And you think that could have been me and Roger?
No, we just need to ask a few routine questions, that's all.
So you think it was her, that Zara?
I haven't said that.
You said you think someone helped the bank robber. That Zara was dodgy. I could see it the moment I set eyes on her. She was obviously too rich to want that apartment. And I heard that pregnant woman tell her wife that Zara looked like Cruella de Vil. I think that's from a film. It sounds dodgy anyway. Or do you think it was Estelle who helped the bank robber? She's almost 90, you know. Are you going to start accusing 90-year-olds of helping criminals now? Is that how modern policing works?
I'm not accusing anyone.
Roger and I never help anyone else at an apartment viewing. I can promise you that. Roger says that the moment we walk in, it's war and we are surrounded by enemies. That's why he always wants me to tell everyone that the apartment needs a lot of work done to it and that the cost of that would be very expensive, as well as the smell of damp, things like that. Roger's a very good negotiator. We've made some extremely good investments.
So you've done this before? Bought an apartment only to flip it?
There's no point in an investment if you don't sell, Roger says. So we buy, Roger does the renovations, I sort out the decor, then we sell and buy another apartment.
That sounds like an unusual thing for two people who are retired to do.
Roger and I like working on projects together.
Are you okay?
Yes.
You look like you're crying.
I've had a very trying day.
Sorry, that was insensitive of me.
I know Roger doesn't always come across as particularly sensitive, but he is. He likes us to have a project in common because he's worried we'd run out of things to talk about otherwise. He doesn't think I'm interesting enough to be with all day unless we've got a project.
I'm sure that's not true.
What would you know about that?
I guess I don't know anything at all. Sorry. I'd like to ask a few questions about the other prospective buyers now.
Roger's more sensitive than he seems.
Okay. Can you tell me anything about the other people at the viewing?
They were looking for a home.
Sorry?
Roger says there are two types of buyer. Those who are looking for an investment and those who want a home. The ones who are looking for a home are emotional idiots. They'll pay anything because they think all their problems will just disappear the moment they move in.
I'm not sure I understand.
Roger and I don't let our feelings get in the way of our investments. But everyone else does, like those two women at the viewing, the one who was pregnant and the other one.
Julia and Roe?
Yes.
You think they were the sort who were looking for a home?
It was obvious. People like that go to viewings thinking that everything would feel better if only they were living there. That they'd wake up in the mornings and not find it hard to breathe. They wouldn't have to look in the bathroom mirror with an invisible weight in their chest. They'd argue less, maybe touch each other's hands the way they did when they were first married, back when they couldn't help it. That's what they think.
You'll have to excuse me, but it looks like you're crying again.
Don't tell me what I'm doing.
Okay. But you seem to have put a fair amount of thought into how people behave at apartment viewings. Is that fair to say?
Roger does most of the thinking. Roger's very intelligent, you know. You need to know your enemy, he says, and all your enemy wants is to get it over with. They just want to move in and have done with it and never have to move again. Roger isn't like that. We saw a documentary about sharks once. Roger's very interested in documentaries. And there's a particular type of shark that dies if it stops moving. It's something to do with the way they absorb oxygen. They can't breathe unless they're moving the whole time. That's how our marriage has ended up.
Sorry, I'm afraid I don't understand.
Do you know what the worst thing about being retired is?
No.
That you get too much time to think. People need a project, so Roger and I became sharks. And if we didn't keep moving, our marriage wouldn't get any oxygen. So we buy and renovate and sell. Buy and renovate and sell. I did suggest that we try golf instead, but Roger doesn't like golf.
Sorry to interrupt, but I wonder if we might be getting a little off the point here. You only have to tell me about the hostage situation, not about you and your husband.
But that's the problem.
What is?
I don't think he wants to be my husband anymore.
What makes you say that?
Do you know how many IKEA stores there are in Sweden?
No.
20. Do you know how many Roger and I have been to?
No.
All of them. Every single one. We went to the last one fairly recently, and I didn't think Roger had been keeping count. But when we were in the cafeteria having lunch, Roger suddenly said we should each have a piece of cake as well. We never have cake in IKEA. We always have lunch, but never cake. And that was when I knew that he'd been keeping count. I know Roger doesn't seem romantic, but sometimes he can be the most romantic man on the planet, you know?
That certainly sounds romantic.
He can seem hard on the surface, but he doesn't hate children.
What?
Everyone thinks he hates children because he gets so angry when real estate agents put children's room on the plans. But he only gets angry because he says children push the price up like you wouldn't believe. He doesn't hate children. He loves children. That's why I have to distract him when we're walking through the children's section in IKEA.
I'm sorry.
Why?
Sorry, I took that to mean that you couldn't have children. And if that's the case, I'm sorry.
We've got two children.
I apologize. I misunderstood.
Have you got children?
No.
Our two are about your age, but they don't want kids of their own. Our son said he'd rather focus on his career, and our daughter says the world's already overpopulated.
Oh.
Can you imagine what a bad parent you must have been for your children not to want to be parents?
I've never thought about that.
Roger would have been such a good grandfather, you know, but now he doesn't even want to be my husband.
I'm sure things will work out between you, no matter what's happened.
You don't know what's happened. You don't know what I've done. It was all my fault. But I just wanted to stop. It's been nothing but one apartment after the other for years now, and in the end, I've had enough. I'm looking for a home, too. But I had no right to do what I did to Roger. I should never have paid for that darn rabbit.
Chapter 30. It's harder than you might think to take people hostage when they're idiots. The bank robber hesitated. The ski mask was itching. Everyone was staring. The bank robber tried to think of something to say, but was forestalled by Roger holding one hand up and saying, "We haven't got any cash." Annalena was standing just behind him and immediately repeated over his shoulder, "We haven't got any money, understand?" She rubbed her fingertips together in illustration, because Annalena always seemed to think that Roger spoke a language that only she understood, as if he were a horse and Annalena some kind of equine translator, so she was always trying to interpret what he said to the rest of the world. When they were in a restaurant and Roger asked for the check, Annalena would always turn to the waiter and mouth the words, "Check, please," while simultaneously pretending to write on the palm of her hand. Roger would no doubt have found this incredibly irritating if he ever bothered to pay attention to what Annalena did.
"I don't want your money. Please just be quiet. I'm trying to hear if..."
The bank robber said, listening out toward the door of the apartment in an attempt to figure out if the stairwell was already full of police.
"What are you doing here if you don't want money? If you're going to take us hostage, you might want to be a bit more specific in your demands."
Zara snorted from over by the balcony door, giving the distinct impression that she thought the bank robber was underperforming.
"Can you just give me a minute to think?"
the bank robber asked. Sadly, it appeared that the people in this particular apartment weren't at all prepared to grant the bank robber that. You might think that if someone has a pistol, then people would be willing to do exactly as they've been asked. But some people who've never seen a pistol before simply take it for granted that it's so unlikely to happen that even when it is happening, they can't quite take it seriously. Roger had barely ever seen a pistol before, even on television, because Roger prefers documentaries about sharks. So he held his hand up again, the other one this time, to show that he was serious, and demanded to know loudly and clearly, "Is this a robbery or not? Or is this now some sort of hostage situation? Which way do you want it?" Anna-Lena looked rather uncomfortable when Roger switched hands, because nothing good ever came of Roger gesturing with both hands within the space of a few minutes, so she stage whispered,
"Might it be better not to be provocative, Roger?"
"For God's sake, darling, surely we have a right to accurate information," Roger replied, insulted. Then turned to the bank robber once more and repeated, "Is this a robbery or not?"
Anna-Lena stretched to see over his shoulder and stuck out her thumb and forefinger, then waved them about in illustration while mouthing the words, "Bang," twice, then adding one helpful, "Robbery?" The bank robber took several deep breaths, eyes closed, the way you do when the children are fighting in the back of the car, and you're getting stressed and lose your temper and shout at them rather more loudly than you intended, and they suddenly get so scared that they shut up altogether and you end up hating yourself. Because you don't want to be that sort of parent. And the tone you use after that, when you apologize and explain that you love them but that you just have to concentrate on driving for a little while, that was the tone the bank robber used to address everyone in the apartment.
Can I ask you all to just lie down on the floor and be quiet for a little while so I can just do some thinking?"
No one lay down. Roger refused point blank, saying,
"Not until we know what's going on."
Zara didn't want to because, "Have you seen the state of the floor? This is why everyday people have pets, because it makes literally no difference to them." Julia demanded to be exempt because,
"Look, if you sit me in an armchair, it'll take me 20 minutes to get up, so I'm not going to lie down anywhere."
For the first time, the bank robber noticed that Julia was pregnant. Ro leapt in front of her at once, holding her arms up and grinning disarmingly.
"Please don't mind my wife. She's just a bit hot-headed. Please don't shoot. We'll do exactly what you say."
"I'm not bloody hot-head," Julia protested.
"P-I-S-T-O-L,
Ro hissed. She hadn't looked this scared since the last time she tried to photograph her shoes and accidentally clicked the selfie button instead.
"It doesn't even look real," Julia pointed out.
"Great, let's take a chance then. We're only risking our child's life after all," Ro retorted.
At that point, the bank robber clearly felt that enough was enough and pointed at Julia.
I didn't notice you were pregnant. You can leave. I don't want to hurt anyone, especially not a baby. I just need to think for a moment."
When he heard this, Roger was struck by an idea so brilliant that only Roger could have been struck by it.
"Yes, go on. Off you go," he exclaimed.
Then he marched over to the bank robber and added seriously,
"I mean, you can let them all go, can't you? You really only need one hostage, don't you? That would make things a lot easier."
Roger poked his chest with his thumb repeatedly to indicate who the hostage should be, then added,
"Plus the real estate agent. I can stay with the real estate agent."
Julia glared suspiciously at him and snapped,
"That would suit you, wouldn't it? So you can make an offer on the apartment after the rest of us have gone?"
"Keep out of this," Roger demanded.
"Like there's any chance we're leaving you alone here with the real estate agent?" Julia snapped.
Affronted, Roger shook all the loose skin on the lower half of his face.
"This apartment isn't suitable for you anyway. This is going to need someone who's good at DIY.
Julia, far too competitive to let that pass, snapped back,
"My wife's pretty damn good at DIY.
"What?"
Ro said in surprise, unaware that there was another wife apart from her. Anna-Lena thought out loud,
Don't shout. Think of the baby.
Roger nodded aggressively.
Exactly. Think of the baby.
Annalena looked happy because he'd heard her, but Julia's eyes darkened.
I'm not going anywhere until I've bought this apartment, you miserable old goat.
Ro tugged at her arm anxiously and hissed,
Why do you always have to argue with everyone?
Because Ro had seen that look in her eyes before. On their very first date, several years ago, Julia was standing outside a bar smoking while Ro was inside ordering drinks. 2 minutes later, a security guard came over to Ro, pointed through the window, and asked, Are you with her? Ro nodded and was immediately thrown out of the bar. Apparently, there was a delineated smoking area outside the bar. That was the only place you were allowed to smoke. But Julia had been standing 2 yards beyond the boundary. When the guard told her to go inside the rectangle, Julia started jumping about on the line, mocking him.
What about here? Am I okay here? How about if I hold my cigarette inside while I'm standing outside? What about here? If the cigarette's outside, but I blow the smoke into the rectangle.
When Julia had a bit of alcohol inside her, she tended to have trouble respecting any sort of authority, which might be thought a bad character trait to reveal on a first date, but when Ro was being thrown out, she asked the security guard how he knew she and Julia were there together, and he replied gruffly,
When I told her to leave, she pointed at you through the window and said, That's my girlfriend. I'm not leaving without her.
That was the first time Ro had ever been anyone's girlfriend. That was the evening she went from being hopelessly infatuated to irrevocably in love. Later on, it turned out that Julia's personality when she was drunk was exactly the same as Julia's personality when she was pregnant. So the past 8 months had been fairly tumultuous, but life is full of surprises.
Please, Jules, Rose said tentatively.
Julia hissed back.
If we leave now, this apartment could well be sold by the time we come back. How many apartments have we looked at? 20? You've found something wrong with every single one, and I can't bear it. So I'm damn well going to have this one, and no one's going to come along and say I...
P-I-S-T-O-L, Ro repeated.
Are you going to be farting a 10-pound monkey out of your uterus anytime now, Ro? Well, so shut up.
It isn't fair to play the pregnancy card every time we have an argument, Jules. We've talked about that,
Ro muttered, sticking her hands deep into the pockets of her dress. And then Julia realized that she may have gone a bit too far, because Ro's hands had only delved that deeply into her pockets when the neighbor's kids killed one of her birds. The bank robber let out a quiet cough and said,
Excuse me, I don't want to interrupt, but...
then raised the pistol a little higher so that everyone could see it and remember exactly what was going on here. Julia folded her arms over her chest and repeated one last time,
I'm not going anywhere.
Ro let out a sigh so deep you could have found oil at the bottom of it, then nodded firmly,
and I'm not going anywhere without her.
This would obviously have been a very touching moment if Zara hadn't spoiled it by snorting at Ro.
No one offered you the chance to leave. You're not pregnant.
Ro dug her hands so far into her pockets that she actually punched holes in them and mumbled,
We're actually on this journey together.
Roger, who had been getting more and more frustrated that no one seemed to be focusing on the most important thing here, that Roger hadn't been given any accurate information, was now pointing at the bank robber with both hands.
So what are you after, then? Well, is it the apartment you want?
Annalena described a square in the air with her hands like a mime artist trying to say, apartment. The bank robber groaned in resignation at the pair of them.
Why would I? You can't just... Are you suggesting that I'm trying to steal the apartment?
Roger seemed to recognize how ridiculous that sounded when it was said out loud, but seeing as Roger was a man who was never wrong, even when he was obviously wrong, he clarified,
Now look here! It's got huge potential for renovation!
Annalena stood behind him with an imaginary hammer, waving it in the air by way of illustration. The bank robber coughed quietly again and could feel the beginnings of a headache, then said,
Can't you just lie down? Just for a little while. I wasn't trying. I mean, I was going to rob a bank, but I had no intention. Look, this isn't what I had in mind.
For various reasons, the silence that followed was so complete that the only sound was the bank robber's sobs. That's never a comfortable combination, someone crying with a pistol in their hand, so none of the others was entirely sure how to react. Ro nudged Julia and muttered, "Now see what you've done." And Julia muttered back, "It was you who..." Roger turned to Annalena and whispered, "It really does have immense potential for renovation." And Annalena replied quickly,
"Yes, it really does, doesn't it? You're absolutely right. But isn't that damp I can smell? Mold, even?"
The bank robber was still sobbing. None of the others felt like looking in that direction, because, as already mentioned, it's hard to feel comfortable with armed expressions of emotion, so in the end, it was Estelle who cautiously padded over. Either she didn't know any better, or she most definitely did. It might seem a little odd that Estelle hasn't been mentioned very often up till now in this story, not because Estelle is easy to forget about, but because she's very hard to remember. Estelle has what might be called a transparent personality. 87 years old, with a body as gnarled and crooked as a piece of ginger, she slipped over to the bank robber and asked,
"Are you all right, dear?"
When the bank robber didn't answer, she went on babbling in a singularly untroubled manner.
"My name's Estelle. I'm here to take a look at the apartment on behalf of my daughter. My husband, Canute, is parking the car. It isn't at all easy to find anywhere to park around here, and I don't suppose it will be any easier now that the street's full of police cars. Sorry, now I've made you worried. I didn't mean it was your fault that Canute couldn't find anywhere to park, of course. Are you feeling all right? Would you like a glass of water?"
The pistol didn't seem to bother Estelle, but on the other hand, she seemed to be such a kind person that if she were murdered, she'd probably have taken it as a compliment that someone had noticed her. Using a paper handkerchief to dry the tears, the bank robber said quietly,
"Yes, please."
"We've got limes," Ro called out, pointing at the bowl on the coffee table, full of at least a couple dozen. Limes seemed to be such a popular adornment at apartment viewings that it's tempting to think that if real estate agents were banned, the surface of the earth would become covered with such a thick layer of limes that only young people with very small knives and an inexplicable fondness for Mexican beer would survive. Estelle fetched a glass of water, and the bank robber raised the mask slightly so as to be able to drink it.
"Is that better?" Estelle asked.
The bank robber nodded gently and handed the glass back to her.
I'm very sorry about all this."
"Oh, don't worry, dear. It doesn't matter," Estelle said. "I have to say, I think it was smart of you not to have come here to steal the apartment, because that wouldn't have been very clever, would it? Because the police would have known where to find you straight away. Was it the bank across the street that you were planning to rob? Isn't that one of those cashless banks these days?"
"Yes, thanks. I noticed that,"
the bank robber replied through clenched teeth. "Smart," Zara declared. The bank robber turned toward her, losing control altogether and shouting the way you do when the kids start arguing in the back of the car again.
"I didn't know, okay? Anyone can make a mistake."
Roger, whose instinct whenever anyone shouted, regardless of context, was always to shout louder, shouted,
"All I want is information!"
So the bank robber shouted,
"Just let me think!"
To which Roger shouted,
"You're not much good at being a bank robber, you know!"
Whereupon the bank robber waved the pistol and shouted,
"Luckily for you!"
Ro quickly stepped forward and shouted,
"Okay, everyone stop shouting now! It's not good for the baby!"
Which, of course, was perfectly true. Babies find shouting unsettling. Ro had read that in the same book that had told her that pregnancy was a shared journey. After this pronouncement, she turned to Julia as if she were expecting a medal. Julia rolled her eyes.
"Really, Ro? Someone's pointing a gun at us and you're worried about a few raised voices?"
In the meantime, Estelle gently patted the bank robber's arm and explained,
"Yes, those two are going to have a baby together, you know, even though they're from, well, you know."
She winked at the bank robber as if that were all she needed to say. It didn't seem to have worked, though. So Estelle adjusted her skirt and changed tack.
Well, I don't see why we have to fall out. Can't we start by introducing ourselves instead? My name is Estelle. You never said what your name is.
With a tilt of the head and a gesture toward the mask, the bank robber said,
Look, that's not a great question to ask me.
Estelle nodded apologetically at once and turned to the others.
Well, then, perhaps we should assume that our friend here wants to remain anonymous. But you could tell us all your names, couldn't you?
She said, nodding at Roger.
Roger,
Roger muttered.
And my name's Annalena,
Annalena said, accustomed to not being asked. I'm Ro, and this is my wife, Julie.
Ow!
Ro said, clutching her shin. The bank robber looked at them all, then gave a brief nod.
Okay. Hello.
So now we all know each other. Lovely,
Estelle declared, so delighted that she clapped her hands. And for such a slight person, she could clap her hands surprisingly hard. Which isn't a great thing to do in a room in which someone is holding a pistol, seeing as everyone thought that the sudden clap was a pistol shot and threw themselves down on the floor. The bank robber looked at the prone bodies in surprise, then with a scratch of the head turned to Estelle and said,
Thanks. That was very helpful of you.
Annalena was lying curled up on the carpet by the sofa and had trouble breathing for half a minute until she realized that was because Roger, when he thought he heard a pistol shot, had thrown himself on top of her. Chapter 31.
Witness interview. Date, December 30th. Name of witness, Estelle. I really am very sorry about all this. We'll try to get you home as soon as possible.
Oh, don't worry. To be honest, this has all been rather exciting. Not much exciting happens most days when you're nearly 90.
Of course, yes. Well, my colleague and I would very much like to ask you to look at this drawing. We found it in the stairwell, and we think it shows a monkey, a frog, and an elk. Do you recognize it?
No, I'm afraid not. Is that really supposed to be an elk?
I don't know, I really don't. To be honest, I'm not sure it really matters. Would you mind telling me what you were doing at the apartment viewing?
I was there with my husband, Canute. Well, he wasn't there at the time. He was still parking the car. We were going to look at the apartment for our daughter.
Did you notice anything peculiar about the other people there before the bank robber appeared?
Oh, no. Before then, I only really had time to talk to those nice women from, you know, from Stockholm.
Which ones were they?
Oh, you know, from Stockholm.
You're winking as though I ought to know what that means.
Ro and Jules, they're having a baby together, even though they're both from, you know, Stockholm.
You mean that they're homosexual?
There's nothing wrong with that.
I didn't say there was, did I?
That's absolutely fine these days.
Of course it is. I haven't suggested otherwise.
I think it's wonderful, I really do, that people are free to love whoever they like nowadays.
I'd like to make it absolutely clear that I share that view.
In my day, it would have been regarded as quite remarkable, you know, getting married and having a baby when you're both, well, you know.
From Stockholm?
Yes. But I've actually always rather liked Stockholm, you know. You have to let people live their lives however they want. I mean, that's not to say I've been to Stockholm myself. I haven't. Of course not. I'm not. That's to say, I've never. I'm happily married to Knut. And I'm very happy with the usual, you know.
I have no idea what we're talking about anymore.
Chapter 32. When the first police siren was heard from the street, the bank robber ran out onto the balcony and peered over the railing. That was how the first blurry mobile phone pictures of the masked gunman appeared on the internet. Then even more police officers appeared.
Shit, 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 shit,
the bank robber repeated quietly, then ran back inside the apartment, where everyone except for Julia was still lying on the floor.
I can't lie down any longer because I need to go to the toilet. Or do you want me to do it all over the floor?
Julia snapped defensively, even though the bank robber showed no sign of saying anything.
Not that it would make much difference,
Zara said, lifting her face from the parquet floor in disgust. Ro, who seemed to have a lot of experience in being yelled at despite not actually having said anything, sat up and patted the bank robber's leg consolingly.
Don't take the fact that Julia's shouting at you personally. She's just a bit sensitive because the baby's having a disco in her stomach, you know?
Personal information, Ro,
Julia roared. They have a definition for what counts as personal, Julia and Ro, even though Julia is the only one who knows what that definition is.
I was actually talking to our bank robber. You only told me not to talk to the other prospective buyers, Ro said defensively.
But I'm not really a bank...
The bank robber began, but was drowned out by Julia.
Doesn't make any difference, Ro. Stop making friends. I know how this ends. They tell you their life story, and then you feel bad when we have to outbid them for the apartment.
That happened once, Ro called after her.
3 times,
Julia said, reaching for the bathroom door. Ro gestured apologetically to the bank robber.
Julia says I'm the sort of person who refuses to eat fish sticks after seeing the dolphins at the Sea Life Center.
The bank robber nodded understandingly.
My daughters are like that.
Ro smiled.
You've got daughters? How old are they?
The numbers seemed to catch in the bank robber's throat.
6 and 8?
Zara cleared her throat and asked,
Are they going to inherit the family business, then?
Wounded, the bank robber blinked and looked down at the pistol.
I've never done this before. I'm not a criminal.
I certainly hope not, because you really are shockingly bad at it, Zara declared.
Why do you have to be so critical? Ro snapped at her.
I'm not critical. I'm giving feedback, Zara said by way of offering feedback.
I can't imagine you'd be that good at robbing people, Ro said.
I don't rob people. I rob banks, the bank robber interjected.
And how good are you at that on a scale of 1 to 10?
Zara asked. The bank robber looked at her sheepishly.
A 2, maybe.
Have you even got a plan for how you're going to get out of here?
Zara asked.
Stop being so demanding. Criticism doesn't help anyone improve, Ro said critically.
Zara studied her intently.
Is this what your personality is like? Are you happy with it?
Says you,
Ro began. Then the bank robber tried to calm things down.
Can you just... Please, I haven't got a plan. I need to think. It wasn't supposed to turn out like this.
What?
Ro asked.
Life,
the bank robber sniffed. Zara took her phone out of her pocket and said,
Okay, let's call the police and get this sorted out.
No, don't,
the bank robber said.
Zara rolled her eyes. What are you scared of? Do you honestly think they don't know you're here? You have to call them and tell them how much ransom you want, at least.
You can't call. There's no signal in here, Ro said.
Are we in prison already?
Zara wondered, shaking her phone as if that might help. Ro stuck her hands in her pockets and said half to herself,
It's actually not that bad, because I've read that children who grow up not staring at screens are more intelligent. Technology stunts the development of the brain.
Zara nodded sarcastically.
Really? Tell me about all the Nobel Prize winners who grew up in Amish communities.
I've actually read that there's research that says mobile signals cause cancer, Ro persisted.
Yes, but what if it's an emergency? What if you move in here and your baby chokes on a peanut and dies because you can't call an ambulance?
Zara said.
What are you talking about? Where would the baby get the peanut from in the first place?
Maybe someone put some through the mail slot during the night.
Are you really this sick?
I'm not the one who wants my baby to choke to death.
They were interrupted by Julia, who was suddenly standing beside them again.
What are you arguing about now?
She started it. I was trying to be friendly, and that's not the same as me not wanting to eat fish sticks,
Ro snapped defensively, pointing at Zara. Julia groaned and looked apologetically at Zara. Did Ro tell you about the Sea Life Center? And dolphins aren't even fish.
What's that got to do with anything? Anyway, weren't you going to the toilet?
It was occupied, Julia said, shrugging. The bank robber pulled at the ski mask with one hand, then counted the people in the room, then stammered,
"Hang on. What do you mean, occupied?"
"Occupied," Julia repeated, as if that were going to help. The bank robber went and tugged at the bathroom door. It was locked. And that was how this turned into a story about a rabbit. Chapter 33.
Witness interview continued.
I'd like to make it clear that I'm sure Stockholm is perfectly pleasant, if you like Stockholmers. And I can tell you right now that I don't think Knut has any prejudices either, because once when we were younger, I was tidying his office and I found an entire magazine all about Stockholm.
Great.
I didn't think so at the time. We actually had quite a row about it, Knut and I.
I see. So you were talking to Ro and Julia when the bank robber came in?
They keep birds, and they argued all the time, but in a cute way. Of course, the other couple were arguing too, Roger and Anna Lena, but that was nowhere near as cute.
What were Roger and Anna Lena arguing about?
The rabbit.
What rabbit?
Oh, it's quite a long story, if I'm honest. They were arguing about the cost of the apartment per square foot, you see. Roger was worried that everyone was pushing the price up. He said the housing market was being manipulated by bastard real estate agents and bastard bankers and Stockholmers.
Hold on. Was he saying that homosexuals were manipulating the housing market?
Homosexuals? Why would they be doing that? That's a terrible thing to say. Who'd say a thing like that?
You said Stockholmers were doing it.
Yes, but I meant Stockholmers, not Stockholmers.
Is there a difference?
Yes. One's Stockholmers, and the other's Stockholmers.
Sorry, but I'm confused now. Let me try to write this down in chronological order.
Take your time, as much time as you need. I'm not in a hurry.
I'm sorry, but I think perhaps it would be best if we went back to the first question.
Which one was that?
Did you notice anything particular about the other prospective buyers?
Zara looked sad, and Anna Lena didn't like the green curtains, and Ro was worried the closet wouldn't be big enough. But it's one of those walk-in closets, as they're called these days. I didn't know that until I heard Jules call it that.
No, hold on, that can't be right. There's no walk-in closet on the plans.
Maybe it looks smaller on there?
The plan must be to scale, though, surely.
Oh, must it?
On the plans, the closet isn't even 2 square feet in size. Can I ask how big this walk-in closet is?
I'm not very good at measurements, but Ro said she wanted to use it as a hobby room. She makes her own cheese, you know, and grows flowers. Well, some sort of plants, anyway. Jules isn't very happy about that. Once Ro tried to make her own champagne and made a mess of Jules's underwear drawer, Ro said that caused a hell of a fight.
Sorry, but can we try to focus on the size of the closet?
Jules was insistent that it was a walk-in closet.
Is it big enough to hide in?
Who?
Anyone.
I suppose so. Is it important?
No, probably not. But my colleague was keen that I should ask all the witnesses about possible hiding places. Would you like some coffee?
A cup of coffee would certainly be very nice. I wouldn't say no to that at all.
Chapter 34. The bank robber stared at the bathroom door, then at all the hostages, then asked,
"Do you think there's someone in there?"
Zara countered in a way that could have been taken as sarcastic.
"What do you think?"
The bank robber blinked so many times that it looked like Morse code.
"So you do think there's someone in there, then?" Did your parents by any chance have the same surname before they met? Zara asked. Roe took offense on behalf of the bank robber and snapped, Why do you have to be such a cow?
Julia kicked Roe's shin and hissed,
Don't get involved, Roe.
You're the one who's always saying we're going to teach our child to stand up to bullies. I'm not going to stand here and let her talk to...
Roe protested.
Talk to who? A bank robber? Is that bullying? Heaven forbid that someone who's threatening us with a gun should feel offended,
Julia said with a groan.
I'm not, the bank robber began, but Julia raised a warning finger.
You know what? You're the one who's caused all this, so you can just shut up.
Zara, who was looking at the dust on her clothes and couldn't have appeared more disgusted if she'd just climbed out of a pile of manure, noted,
Good that your kid's got at least one mother who isn't a communist.
Julia spun around toward her.
And you can shut up as well.
Zara did actually shut up. No one was more surprised by that than Zara herself. In the meantime, Roger cautiously rose to his feet. He helped Aunt Elena up. She looked him in the eye, and he didn't really know where to look. They weren't used to touching each other without turning the lights out first. Aunt Elena blushed, and Roger turned around and started knocking absentmindedly on the walls in an attempt to look busy. He always knocked on the walls at apartment viewings. Aunt Elena wasn't entirely sure why, but he said it was because he needed to know if you could drill into them. That was important to Roger, this business of drilling. And it was just as important to know if the wall was load-bearing. If you remove a load-bearing wall, the ceiling collapses. And apparently you could hear that if you knocked on the wall. At least you could if you were Roger. So he did it everywhere at every single viewing, knocking and knocking and knocking. Aunt Elena sometimes used to think that everyone gets a few moments that show who they really are. Tiny instances that reveal their entire soul. And Roger's were this knocking. Because sometimes, so fleetingly that no one but Aunt Elena would even notice it, he would stand motionless immediately after a knock, looking at the wall in anticipation, the way a child might, as if he were hoping that one day someone would knock back. Those were Aunt Elena's favorite Roger moments. Knock, knock, knock. 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 He suddenly stopped right in the middle of a knock, because he was listening to the conversation between Roe and Julia and Zara about the locked bathroom door. A shiver ran down Roger's spine when he realized that the most terrible thing of all might be hiding in there, another prospective buyer. He therefore decided to take charge of the situation at once. He marched straight over to the locked bathroom and had just raised his hand to knock when Aunt Elena cried out,
No!
Roger turned around in surprise and looked at his wife. She was shaking all over and was blushing right down to her fingertips.
Please, don't open the door, she whispered.
And Roger had never seen her so frightened and had absolutely no idea what might be the cause. Zara was standing alongside them, looking from one to the other. Then, predictably, she walked to the bathroom door and knocked on it. After a short pause, someone knocked back. By then, tears were running down Aunt Elena's cheeks. Chapter 35. Witness interview, date December 30th, name of witness, Roger. Are you okay?
What sort of question is that?
Your nose looks like it's been bleeding.
Yes, well, it does that sometimes. The quack says it's stress. Never mind that. Just ask your questions.
Okay, then. You went to the apartment viewing with your wife, Aunt Elena?
How do you know that?
It's in my notes.
Why have you got notes about my wife?
We're interviewing all the witnesses.
You shouldn't have notes about my wife.
Just stay calm now.
I'm perfectly freaking calm.
In my experience, that's what people who are anything but calm say.
I'm not going to answer any questions about my wife.
No, okay, fine. Can you answer some questions about the perpetrator, then?
How can I answer that until you've asked them?
To start with, where do you think he's hiding?
Who?
Who do you think?
The bank robber?
No, Waldo.
Who's that?
You don't know who Waldo is? It's the title of an old kid's book. Where's Waldo? Forget it. I was being sarcastic.
I have no reason to read kids' books.
I'm sorry. Can you tell me where you think the perpetrator is hiding?
How should I know?
I hope you'll forgive me pressing you for an answer, but we have reason to believe that the perpetrator is still in the apartment. I thought perhaps you might be able to help, because your wife says you do exhaustive research before each viewing, and that you check all the measurements on the plans.
You can't trust real estate agents. Some of them couldn't even measure a ruler using another ruler.
That's exactly what I mean. Did you discover anything special about this particular apartment?
Yes, the real estate agent is an idiot.
Why?
There were 3 feet missing from the measurements between the walls.
Really? Between which walls? Can you show me on the plan?
There, you can hear it if you knock. The gap.
Why would it be there?
Probably because this apartment and the one next door used to be one single larger apartment once upon a time, when people around here had more money and apartments were cheaper. Now the whole housing market's being manipulated to screw ordinary people. It's the real estate agent's fault, and the banks, and people from Stockholm, driving the prices up and everything. What the hell are you rolling your eyes for?
Sorry, I don't want to get involved. But haven't you and your wife bought and sold a number of apartments as speculative investments in recent years? Surely that must push prices up as well.
So now there's something wrong with making a bit of money, too?
I didn't say that.
I'm a good negotiator, and that isn't a crime, you know.
No, of course not.
At least I thought I was a good negotiator.
I don't follow you.
I used to be an engineer before I retired. Does it say that in your notes?
What? No.
So that's not relevant, then. A whole life spent doing a job, and it isn't relevant enough to be included in your notes. Do you know what my colleagues did in those last years?
No.
They were faking it, just like her.
Your wife?
No, Waldo.
What?
You think people in your generation are the only ones who can be sarcastic, boy?
Chapter 36. Julia nodded toward the bathroom door, held her hand out toward the bank robber, and demanded, "Give me the pistol."
Absolutely not. What are you thinking of doing?
The bank robber stammered, hiding the pistol from view like it was a kitten, and someone had just asked the bank robber if anyone had seen a kitten anywhere.
"I'm pregnant and I need to go to the toilet. Give me the pistol so I can shoot the lock out," Julia repeated.
"No," the bank robber whimpered. Julia threw her arms out.
"You'll have to do it yourself then. Just shoot the lock out."
"I don't want to." Julia's eyes narrowed in an unsettling way.
"What do you mean you don't want to? You're holding us all hostage, and the police are outside, and you've got an unknown individual in the bathroom. It could be anyone. You need to have a bit of respect for yourself. How else are you ever going to be a successful bank robber? You can't let people tell you what to do the whole time."
"But you're telling me what to do," the bank robber started to say. But Julia interrupted.
"Shoot the lock out, I said."
For a moment, it looked like the bank robber was going to do as she said. But suddenly, there was a small click, the door handle slowly swung down, and a voice said from inside the bathroom,
"Don't shoot! Please don't shoot!"
A man dressed in a rabbit costume emerged. Well, if we're being completely truthful, not a complete costume. It was really just a rabbit's head, because apart from that, the man was wearing nothing but underpants and socks. He appeared to be in his 50s, and if we're being diplomatic, had the sort of body that wasn't exactly flattered by the ratio of clothing to skin.
"Don't hurt me, please. I'm just doing my job,"
the man whined from inside the rabbit's head in a Stockholm accent as he stuck his hands up. He was evidently a Stockholmer, one of the ones who was born there, not just a Stockholmer in the sense that Jim and Jack used it when they actually meant idiot. Which, of course, doesn't mean that the man wasn't an idiot as well, because it's still a free country. And he certainly wasn't a Stockholmer in the way that Estelle used the word to describe the sort of family unit that there's absolutely nothing wrong with. And if he had been, then obviously there wouldn't have been anything wrong with that at all. He was just a perfectly ordinary Stockholmer who happened to be saying from inside the rabbit's head,
Tell them not to shoot me, Annalena.
Everyone fell silent. No one more so than Roger. He was staring at Annalena. She was staring at the rabbit and crying, her fingers fluttering about her hips as she evaded Roger's surprised stare. She couldn't remember the last time she had seen her husband surprised. That's really not supposed to happen when you've been married so long. You're supposed to have just one thing in your life, one single person you can count on to the extent that you end up taking her for granted. And at this precise moment, Annalena knew all that was ruined for Roger. She whispered in despair,
"Don't hurt him. It's Leonard."
"Do you know this person?" Roger spluttered.
Annalena nodded sadly.
"Yes, but it's not what you think, Roger."
Is he?
Roger struggled before finally managing to utter the impossible words.
"Another prospective buyer?"
Annalena couldn't bring herself to answer. So Roger spun around and lurched toward the bathroom door with such force that both Julia and Ro, Zara helpfully merely jumped out of the way, were obliged to hold him back with all their strength so that he couldn't get a stranglehold on the rabbit.
"Why is my wife crying? Who are you? Are you a prospective buyer? Answer me this instant!"
Roger bellowed. He didn't get an immediate answer, and that upset Annalena as well. Roger had always been an important, respected man at work, and even his bosses had listened to him there. Retirement wasn't something that Roger entered into voluntarily. It was something that had suddenly afflicted him. The first few months he would drive past the office, sometimes several times a day, because he was hoping to see some sign that the people inside couldn't cope without him. He never saw one. He wasn't at all difficult to replace, so he went home and the business carried on existing. That realization was a great burden to Roger and made him slower.
"Answer me,"
he demanded of the rabbit, but the rabbit was busy trying to take its rabbit head off. It had evidently got stuck. Beads of sweat bounced from hair to hair on his bare back, like a singularly unappealing pinball game, and his underpants were now also sitting slightly crookedly. The bank robber stood mutely alongside and looked on, and Zara clearly felt it was time for a bit more feedback, so she gave the bank robber a shove.
"Aren't you going to do something?"
"Like what?"
the bank robber wondered.
"Take charge! What sort of hostage taker are you?"
Zara demanded.
"I'm not a hostage taker, I'm a bank robber,"
the bank robber whimpered.
"That turned out to be a great choice, didn't it? Please, just stop pushing me." "Oh, just shoot the rabbit so we can get things sorted out, so you earn a bit of respect. You only have to shoot it in the leg." "No, don't shoot!"
the rabbit screamed.
"Stop giving me orders," the bank robber said.
"He could be a policeman," Zara suggested. "I still don't want to. Give me the pistol, then." "No!"
Unconcerned, Zara turned to the rabbit.
"Who are you? Are you a cop or what? Answer or we'll shoot."
"I'm the one doing the shooting here."
"Well, I'm not, actually,"
the bank robber protested. Zara patted the bank robber condescendingly on the arm.
Of course you are. Of course you are."
The bank robber stamped the floor in frustration.
"No one's listening to me! You're the worst hostages ever!"
"Please don't shoot, my head's stuck,"
Leonard cried from inside the rabbit's head, then went on.
"Annalena can explain everything. I'm with her."
Suddenly, there wasn't enough air for Roger. He turned to Annalena again, so slowly that she couldn't remember him turning to her like that, since one day in the early 1990s, when he realized she'd used the wrong VHS tape to record an episode of a soap opera and accidentally recorded over an important documentary about antelopes. Roger couldn't find any words for her betrayal, either then or now. They had always been people of simple words. Annalena may have hoped that would improve when they had children, but the reverse had happened. Parenthood can lead to a sequence of years when the children's feelings suck all the oxygen out of a family. And that can be so emotionally intense that some adults go for years without having an opportunity to tell anyone about their own feelings. And if you don't get a chance for long enough, sometimes you simply forget how to do it. Roger's love for Annalena was visible in other ways. Little things, like checking the screws and hinges of the little mirrored door on her cabinet in the bathroom every day, so it would always open and close with the least possible resistance. At the time of day when Aunt Elena opened the cabinet, she really wasn't ready for any difficulties. Roger knew that. Aunt Elena had become interested in interior design late in life, but she had read in a book that every designer needed an anchor in each new scheme. Something solid and definite that everything else can build upon, spreading out from it in ever-increasing circles. For Aunt Elena, that anchor was her bathroom cabinet. Roger understood that because he appreciated the value of immovable objects, such as load-bearing walls. You can't make them adapt to you. You simply have to adapt to them. So Roger always unscrewed the bathroom cabinet last of all whenever they moved out of an apartment and installed it first when they arrived at the new one. That was how he loved her. But now she was standing there full of surprises and confessing, "This is Leonard, and he and I, well, we have a, you weren't ever supposed to find out, darling." Silence. Betrayal.
"So the two of you, you and the two of you, behind my back?"